time for more movie thoughts, reviews, and royal commentary from Richard Fitzwilliams and Natasha Wanton on the Midweek Drive.
Hey, Rick. You following what's happening in Thailand?
Some kid's stuck in a cave.
We're on the list of rescue divers.
It's just a tourist cave.
It looks easy, but when it's flooded, it's impassable.
It takes a certain kind of mindset for the deep cave diving. You have to be a bit nuts.
They're very, very dangerous.
High water level and the low visibility.
Barely shoulder wide, pulling against very strong currents.
Last seen 9 days ago, 12 boys and their coach are trapped in the flooded caves.
Hello?
Hey.
They're here.
How many of you?
13.
13?
They're all alive.
Can we go out now?
You're talking about a five-hour dive.
You try and dive those kids the whole way, all you'll be bringing out is dead bodies.
With oxygen running low, the entire nation is anxiously waiting for what will happen next.
What are you thinking?
Just a crazy idea.
You've got a skill none of the rest of us have.
No.
It's insane. It's unethical. It's illegal.
Man's already died.
Breathe. We'll do nothing. We'll be bringing him out dead for sure.
So you are expecting casualties?
Yes.
I expect casualties.
Johnny, okay?
Yeah, I'm okay. Just give me a minute. Okay, we can make it.
The one thing you can always guarantee is that Ron Howard will deliver an excellent movie. And I mean excellent movie, whether it's Apollo 13, whether it's 13 Lives, it's Ron Howard at his best. And indeed, I was shocked to find that Richard Fitzwilliams didn't actually have anything other than a cursory mention for 13 Lives in the
Alex, you know, I have an answer for you. Well, I actually sent you the answer.
Yeah, you sent me something which referred to Batwoman, which was a series that was cancelled after 2 years.
Oh, yes.
Exactly.
What I said, let me just explain before you get it completely wrong. You've gone wrong, and before you go further wrong, I'm going to expose this for what it is. Firstly,
in a Rebecca Vardy sort of sense, then, Richard.
Well, all I'm saying to you is that I actually went to a screening of 13 Lives.
Yes.
Yes, the only thing is that the film has been pulled.
No, but it hasn't. It's available. You can look at it on Amazon Prime, just as I actually did. It's perfectly lined. That point of view. It's just been taken away from those theatrical things so that we can actually quite happily watch it as it should be watched on a television set, which is what it's all about, really.
Alex, there are very rare occasions that you shock me to the extent where I find the next sentence difficult to conjure up. But this is one of them, quite frankly, that you should suggest a Ron Howard film should be watched on television, that you, in fact, gone against the large screen. I mean, I'm most amused by your little listeners won't be able to see this, but what in fact Alex is doing is he's got a television set and he's looking out of it.
And I think that that's perfectly well. I mean, you know, you, Richard, on the other hand, are somebody who much prefers to actually go for that. That's not the same. That is not the same experience in any way, shape or form. So, you know, let's at the end of the day go back to our television set and we'll be quite happy with respect to that. After all, it's what mobiles were made for. Isn't that right, Natasha?
I should confirm just for the viewer, Alex is now switching between a cinema screen that he's looking out of and a TV set that he's looking out of.
Good. I'm glad we sorted that out then.
All I can say is that when 13 Lives is available on the cinema, possibly before, but I'm hoping to see it on the widescreen, which is where it should be seen.
You haven't seen it yet, Richard? Well, it's shocking.
No, it's not shocking at all. What happened was, in fact, I was going to the preview in the IMAX. And in fact, I was at a hostelry next door expecting to go from the Euro final, which the Lionesses, of course, won. I'm just telling you, Alex, you probably didn't know or maybe haven't seen this. I was far too excited by the match to leave. And so I couldn't go to the preview. But on the other hand, I thought I'd catch it in the cinema since it was advertised and inaccurately advertised because Amazon have pulled it from the screens.
And well done, Jeff Bezos. Natasha.
Can I ask a question, Richard? Just linked to the Lionesses' victory, which is a great victory, by the way. My sister and my dad were at Wembley and they had an amazing time. They said it was really good. I noticed they're making a big hoo-ha about the whole William hugging each of the individual players and saying and making a big fuss about how that breaks royal protocol. Personally, I found it charming and I think it's probably done some to endear him to people. But what do you think the Queen will make of that? Will that be something she will frown upon or...
Oh, no. I think, firstly, this is, as you know, this is the first time that Britain has won a major male or female team event since 1960.
Richard, once again, you're incorrect. You're talking about the sport of association football. England were Rugby World Cup champions, Rugby Union World Cup champions in 2003, and Cricket World Cup champions, etc. So don't actually slop into a sport that you know nothing about and actually have just sort of jumped on the bandwagon to actually say, oh, how wonderful. Name me six players from the England players team, Richard. Six.
This is the first victory.
Name me six players.
Football victory since 1966. It is. What were the others? You've mentioned other sports.
And you just said you changed your line to football. Name me six particular members of the team, Richard. Let's show how much of a committed sports person you are.
I am not a committed sports person. I am rejoicing at a victory. Do you not rejoice, Alex, at the Lionesses' victory?
They did very well for a team of cheaters, but then again, that's part and parcel of the course. Let us move on, as indeed the Bild would have actually said in Germany, clear penalty, not given. What could you expect? That's what happens. But well done to Beth Mead and the rest of the team. Thank you. Managed, of course, by a lady from the Netherlands, which, again, says its own sort of line.
What's her name, Alex? What's her name?
Serena Wiegmann, Richard.
Oh,
you should know that, but perhaps you don't, because, again, it's a different line entirely. Natasha, let's put another sort of little nail in this old coffin. You went to see... the Crawdads, you enjoyed it, and rightly so.
I went to see it on Wednesday night with a friend of mine. I'm not saying it's the best movie I've ever seen. It's by any means the best movie I've ever seen. There is a lot of faults. There is some very rigid sort of character stereotypes we're sort of using as a crutch. There are... maybe one too many sex scenes. I felt like a couple of the sex scenes felt a little bit unnecessary to the point where it was a little bit comical. The thing I will keep banging on about and the thing that I score is whether or not I emotionally connect with the movie, right? Whether or not it makes me feel something, whether or not, you know, it engages me. And I was actually engaged by the court case. You know, it came to the point where there was the verdict and, you know, I was sort of like, oh, there was tension. I felt the tension because I didn't know at that point which way it was going to go. I haven't read the book, unlike my friend. So I didn't know which way it was going to go. I had several theories I sort of built up in my head and it didn't go any of those. So no, I thought it was interesting. I think it needed the ending. I wasn't expecting quite the sort of epilogue we got, but I thought that it added to it. I cried at the ending, which is always good when you cry. Clearly then connected with the main character, if I'm crying. I didn't think it was, you know, the best movie ever, but I certainly don't think it's a complete train wreck either. I would probably give it a 7. Just having transgressed everything, I thought some of the music was really interesting. Yes, okay, I take to the consideration what Richard's is giving me funny look. I take into consideration the comments you made, Richard, about the makeup. Yes. Granted, in the grand scheme of things, they probably did that to sort of pander to the modern palette. You know, got to be in a movie, got to look pretty. I understand why he decided to go that way. I agree with you. It doesn't necessarily feel authentic to the film, but it didn't distract me at the same time. That might just be me. So yeah, I'm sitting on a 7 with this one. I think it's perfectly watchable. I went with a group of friends. We had a good time.
There we are, you see. So Sarah, in deciding not to actually go and see Where the Crawdads Sing, you missed out on a treat, clearly. There we are. Bottom of the story is listen to Natasha. She knows of what she speaks.
Oh, indeed, Alex. And have you seen it?
No, but then again, it was not my particular
thing. That is absolutely outrageous. So you judge what you haven't seen like Mary Whitehouse used to.
But you haven't seen 13 Lives, and I would rate that as a 9.5, because again,
I haven't seen it because I haven't reviewed it yet. That's why, that's the difference. You were backing Natasha against me, not having seen it.
You learn to trust the reporter.
There's no excuse, Alex. Alex, I can only quote from the Bible regarding the fate of Jezebel. They said, throw her down. And they threw her down, and there was nothing left of her but the palms of her hands and the soles of her feet. That is the fate reserved for those who review that which they have not seen.
Well, there we have it. Let's move on to something that you might well have seen and check out the joys of a movie that I think you'll actually be going for a 7.4 for. No, you don't do points. It'll be a 7, probably. That's The Good Boss.
Actually, it's between 9 and 10, you know. This was a real surprise, and I went to it when, as I say, I pitched up to see 13 Lives, and it wasn't showing at the Curzon Soho, so I had to relocate to the Curzon Bloomsbury. And The Good Boss is a very, very good film. And what it particularly is, it's a study of a very, very complex individual. And it's absolutely fascinated me because what we've had is in the Goya Awards, there are 6 of them in point of fact. And what is particularly significant with the Goya Awards, they're the Spanish Awards, Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor, Best Original Screenplay, Best Score, and so forth. And it's 1/6. And what we see is the boss of a family who wins he runs a factory which produces industrial scales, quite literally scales which you balance. And it's directed by Fernando Leon de Roa. And it has a truly remarkable performance by Javier Bardem as Julio Blanco. And he's someone who regards the company as what I would say is his family. On the other hand, he's absolutely ruthless and unscrupulous when apparently he feels the need, or it needs to be, as so to speak. And what is fascinating is that this is a study of an individual who takes pride supposedly in being ideal. He's the company employs his family, he regards his employees as such, and yet when there's an attractive young intern, well, he'll take more than on average interest in them, and there is a side to him which is ruthless. Now, how this balances out is what is particularly fascinating, because quite honestly, I was very intrigued that a large number of individuals who are utterly ruthless yet fascinating, and also they have a magnetic appeal to women. This is also something that comes across, and it's a very, very interesting feminist aspect to this movie, and I won't go into any spoilers, but you'd think of, say, Tiny Roland, Robert Maxwell, Rupert Murdoch, somebody of extreme power. Obviously, they're very well known. This is someone of company. What happens when he dismisses an individual and the individual camps outside his... he camps outside the gates of the firm, and when this company is shortlisted, then if this person's still there, it's going to cause embarrassment. And so it's a clever, it's a nuanced film. It's a very, very superb, it's an absolutely superlative performance by Javier Bardem, and frankly, I was very impressed by the whole cast. It's an interesting, it's an intriguing film. And from that point of view, I would certainly recommend it and give it between 9 and 10. There are occasional glitches in the screenplay. But having said that, a movie that was a surprise and something that I didn't expect.
There we are, Richard, obviously so shocked he's decided to actually white himself out from the actual connections and all sorts of others.
But Alex, you're being childish. You really are being silly with this, because it's, you know, this is a serious film and you're putting up cartoon characters there.
Well,
it's ridiculous.
It really is
ridiculous for radio.
Let's move on. Sarah, The Good Boss, is it one for you?
Yes, I think that has made me want to go and have a look at it. Something that you can really get involved in. That's what I took from what Richard was saying. I didn't know about Natasha and Kathy, but it sort of stops you thinking about yourself, doesn't it? And really go into a situation. I think I would like to see that, yes.
Splendid. Kathy Manser.
Hi, hello. It does sound great. It sounds like a film. I mean, you know, Richard does always a great job explaining and giving his reviews. And the fact that he's already putting it already so high at a 9 to 10, I mean, why wouldn't I go take his trustworthy word? But also, I'm always into trying to find a film like this, something to connect with. And I guess my question to Richard is, what would have, you said there were like minor things that were happening. What's something you wish they either improved on or took away that really would have given you the solid 10?
Well, for example, I mean, in the script, there are problems. We have an actor called Manolo Solo, who plays Morales, who is the manager and indeed the boss. Javier Bardem's character invents a whole past between him and Morales, which hasn't actually occurred. It hasn't occurred as he says. What has happened is something very, very different. But to be a good boss to the extent where you see your manager falling to bits and disintegrating, as his marriage is disintegrating, what you're actually happening, or what's actually happening, is he wants to trace where his wife is having an affair. And from that point of view, he actually phones the boss. The boss gets out of bed, two of them go outside and try and trace what precisely is occurring and how unfaithful the wife is being. From that point of view, I think it's a little over the top, and just the point about the pretty arid relationship between the boss and his wife. Well, she keeps saying, I've meant to say something to you, but I've forgotten what it is. And I mean...
Finally, I'm having an affair.
Yeah. But this is the boss and his wife. It's supposed to illustrate the fact that his interest is in the interns and not in close to home. The marriage is comfortable, but there is a little intriguing twist, which I'm certainly not revealing, but it is absolutely fascinating, because subsequently what we've got is It's feminism, but it doesn't do a what I would say it's overtly Me Too. What this is a cunning and subtle way whereby women can fight back against manipulative but very charismatic individuals. And one of the interesting aspects of this is that you are the wicked, the perverse aspect, which is where I challenge everyone on this and say why it's such an intriguing film, is that rather like The Wolf of Wall Street, Leonardo DiCaprio, you actually, in a perverse sort of way, are on the side, since he wants the family firm to win a prestigious award, of this character.
Natasha Wanton, like myself, you've probably seen the trailer. Did you come away sort of thinking, yes, this is definitely one for myself?
I saw the trailer and I was quite intrigued as to how it was going to play out on the big screen. I definitely thought there were points of irony in it, and there were sort of lines in it that made me smile and made me have a little bit of a chuckle to myself. But no, judging by the trailer, I wouldn't have expected Richard to give it a 9 or a 10. So that's really making me kind of see it, because it's sort of suggesting that there's definitely something about it. And I'm very glad that Richard confirmed that it's not too overtly Me Too, because I find that unfortunately a lot of directors do that and it's quite off-putting for me. I find it a little bit frustrating. I'm glad that it seems to have been handled in a manner that respects the audience's intelligence, if you know what I mean. So no,
it's got a very nice bite to it, believe me. But the bite is it's double-edged. It's a subtle movie. Hence the Goyas, the Spanish Oscars. Mm-hmm.
So from a movie which Richard provided a 9 to 10 for. I mean, personally, I think, you know, you're not going to beat 13 Lives, but he hasn't seen that as yet. So he will obviously in the fullness of time get to see the joy of this, and why he doesn't use Amazon Prime is another sort of question entirely. Give Them Wings, I suspect you're going to go for again between 9 and 10.
No, it's I mean, it is a challenging film simply because it celebrates a true story of how an individual, Paul Hudson, fights the disabling illness of meningitis. And it's this that is central to this. It's a movie that, I mean, you could say in one sense, it's another recent films, including, say, The Duke, The Phantom of the Open, though those were overtly comic, which celebrate a certain form of eccentric Britishness. And in this case, much of it is a very, very grim film to watch. But on the other hand, it's certainly a contrast. At the end, climactically, I won't reveal anything in any depth, but I would say that there is an aspect to the end which is similar to an Ealing comedy. I mean, Paul is a real-life character. The film depicts the attitudes of the era of the late 1980s, where disability was very little understood, and he is born with this disabling illness of meningitis, and which we see in a flashback he suffered from birth. And at home he has to cope with the disintegrating marriage of his parents, Alice, played by Toya Wilcox, and Norman, played by Bill Fellows. He detests the presence of his uncaring and brutally indifferent father and his reliance on his loving mother. She leaves his father to live with him, and what happens is tested to the limit when she suffers an incapacitating stroke which robs her of speech. So much of this is pretty grim viewing. They receive care. He has a fleeting affair with his carer, Jane, played by Kate Sheridan, but becomes depressed, attempts suicide, and sinks into a coma. So you do have to ask what happens for the future for him. And this is a movie that had a particularly good performance by Daniel Watson as Paul. He isn't I must emphasize this because it's an important point. He isn't a disabled person himself, but nonetheless, it is an amazing performance. It carries the film as Alice, his mother, Toya Wilcox, very weighed down by an unconvincing wig, appropriately sympathetic Norman Bill Fellows, something of a caricature, handles the role well enough. Nice turn from Jacob Anderson as Paul's best friend Ian. And Katie Sheridan has a certain charm as his carriage. It's small town northern life, and it plays on this a bit much. It's set in Darlington. It shamefully uses northern roots as a selling point, and we're shown the obsession with football, which has a good deal.
You should have realised, Richard, you weren't going to score it highly because, of course, you're biased against the north, as most southerners are, but never mind.
Well, Alex, I'm not even dignifying that with a comment, but when Paul poses climactically with Anthony Gormley's sculpture, The Angel of the North, I mean, this is not a subtle movie, but it's quite interesting that it's directed by someone who's played a minor Bond villain, Sean Cronin. And yes, we see the almost unbelievable fortitude required to battle a condition like this. So in that sense, it furthers a certain amount of human understanding, even though it is not, as I say, a subtle movie. So 7 out of 10.
Of course, we can say for northern listeners that at least we'll have water as opposed to the south. Sorry, Sarah, but you're going to have to move north if you want to actually have water, because let's face it, agencies can't cope with any kind of more increase in water. Hopefully you're not taking anything more than 30-second showers these days.
Well, I'm sorry I broke that law this morning. I'm so sorry, Alex.
Yeah. Okay. Well, never mind. Let's move on. Natasha, would you be seeing the Wings movie on the grounds of Richard? You'd clearly give you a bit of a thumbs down. But then, of course, that's what he said about the Crawdads.
I didn't say a bit of a thumbs down. I said on the whole, it's okay, but not subtle, not great. It's good.
I think I will be seeing this kind of movie. I think, you know, presentation is very important. I think movies like this are really important, especially when everything's a bit meh and, you know, you kind of want to feel a bit uplifted and, you know, you want to have a bit of faith in humanity. So
go and see 13 Lives or just watch 13 Lives at home on a widescreen.
I think it must be incredibly difficult for the actor to portray that sort of, you know, to portray the hardships that he's portraying. So I would like to see as well how the main actor handles it. I imagine it, yeah, you if it was me, I would be very anxious, sort of trying to work out, you know, how do I do justice to people who are obviously going to be watching this, who may or may not have, you know, actually suffered this condition. So no, I think it's a very interesting offering. I appreciate that it probably isn't going to be very subtle. But if I'm watching this kind of movie, I might not be looking for something subtle in that moment, if that makes sense. So I think it will depend on the mood in which I watch it.
There's a huge political debate, of course, in which many actors would actually say this is wrong. You shouldn't actually have a perfectly able-bodied actor portraying a differently enabled character, which we can go into at length. And certainly would have actually meant that Daniel Day-Lewis would never have won an Academy Award for My Left Foot. Give them wings. One for yourself, Kathy.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely sharing a common human experience. I mean, I don't think everyone will ever experience meningitis, but everyone's going to experience some sort of sickness, whether it's themselves or someone else. That's more, you know, a sickness that needs to be monitored, and you need support and help. And I think this kind of movie helps. It from what it sounds like, really goes through the steps. Unfortunately, it's horrific, but to go from as Richard was explaining, to go from having a sickness and then dealing with considered suicide and things like that, this is something more common that isn't really expressed. And to go to if you can hire an actor who can actually portray what it's like to be disabled, because actually a fun statistic is a majority of people will be disabled at some point in their life, is something that's not really talked a lot about. And it's more common, especially since a majority of people gain a disability sometime in life for whatever reason. So if it's possible to fulfill it, sure. But at the same time, it's not about looking a certain way or acting, it's whether you can convey those emotions and share that experience. And I think that has to take the priority in a film like this.
And Sarah?
Yes, I think I would like to see it. And I think probably what we've all been saying is having empathy with different people at different stages in their lives and not being cocky at the fact, oh, that's never going to happen to me. So I think that's a very interesting one. On the actor front, I agree with what Kath is saying, but I do think it's not, it's a bit like saying you've got to have so many female MPs. You shouldn't just have a female MP for the sake of a female MP or a male MP. It's the same with actors. So whoever can do that job the best, I think should be the person that's chosen to play that part for the sake of the issues of the film, which is probably going to make me terribly unpopular with people. But I think that's people should be employed on their talents and their gifts.
Oh, Sarah, stop being so radical. I mean, that's a really radical statement for this particular time of the 21st century. Let's move on. 145 minutes, Sarah. That's nearly 3 hours, 2 hours and 25 minutes to be precise. Well, 2.5 hours. Would you give that up to actually watch a play written by Patrick Marber, directed by Claire Lizzie-Moore, focusing at its 25th year anniversary since it first shocked audiences at the Lyric Hammersmith? Would you give up nearly 2.5 hours of your time?
Well, Alex, can you tell me what the title is? Sorry, I missed it.
It's called Closer. What do you want? To be loved. That simple? It's a big want.
Oh, well, maybe I did. I was telling Richard I went to see Jerusalem this week, which was quite a long show, probably on a par with that, which was absolutely fantastic. So I was only aware of the time. I didn't want to miss my last train home. I wasn't aware because I felt it was lagging. How long did you say this one was?
145 minutes, Sarah. 145 minutes.
That's not excessive at all. In fact, for plays, you get, I mean, most films, you could say, perhaps these days, are perhaps 2 hours plus minus. Obviously, some epics considerably longer. Marvel movies certainly longer. But I think for plays, I don't see why you're making...
Marvel movies are saying something about the innate human condition, the agonies of life, the challenges of various other things, play about desire. Surely it can be done in 5 minutes.
No, I'm going to stop you there, Alex. You're being silly, because in the theatre, one of the things is a practicality of changing scenery, lighting, costumes, which on a film you don't have to worry about because you just edit. So I would say, in answer to your question, yes, I would like to go and see that. And until I see it, I can't really comment on the time length.
Well, ticket's only £10, so I suppose it's okay from that point of view. Richard, would you actually endorse this one, or would you say, no, I preferred the movie version back in 2004?
Well, in fact, I saw it at the National in 1997 and also at the West End. So I followed this play and I attended the, in fact, Patrick Marber gave the lecture 10 years after Closer opened, because it became something of a cult, especially linked to a scene where a journalist deliberately fools a dermatologist pretending to be a woman. It's got four characters. It's a play about desire, duplicity, carnality, egotism, set in the London of the 1990s. They're all very fallible human beings. The play, riveting, funny, and pretty brutal and destructive insight into the human condition. I thought a very, very successful one. But here again, we've been talking about feminism, and this is such an overtly feminist production that there's a very error at its heart, which is a fatal flaw for the evening. The time isn't particularly relevant, but what is very relevant is the way it's handled. You've got two women, Alice, who's a stripper, the conscience of the play, Ella Hunt giving a good performance, and Anna, a photographer, played by Nina Toussaint-White, also eliciting a certain empathy, but somebody who falls in and out of love. In fact, both men, Dan, who is so grotesque here, played by Jude Law in the film, which was most successful, directed by Mike Nichols, I thought, but here, Jack Farthing, he's deliberately set up to look so repulsive that you can hardly look at him. Yes, the men are devious and manipulative. That is indeed in the play and in any interpretation of the play you wish to make. As Larry, the dermatologist with an inferiority complex, you've got Sam Troughton, a fine actor, but he overplays certain parts of it because he's obviously been told to attempt to be comic. And one of the problems is that if you diminish the men to the male characters to the degree that this production does, then the female characters, in contrast, are not
Richard, as a pale white male, you've got no rights to make that statement. Male, pale, and stale. What are you doing, sir? What are you doing?
I wish. And all I say is director Claire Lismore simply doesn't believe or hasn't read or does not understand the fact that both women fall in love with both men, and nobody would.
Desire. They want to get closer.
Closer. This doesn't get close to the original play. I mean, again, both women give, I thought, especially Alice, a very good performance. But it's a play. It's about sexual politics, which is largely sterile, and that's a very palpable fault, especially in a theatre that hasn't got proper air conditioning. This was unfortunate.
But Richard, the movie starred Natalie Portman, Natasha's favourite actress. I mean, surely on that basis alone.
The movie was absolutely excellent. And in fact, I quite often see it. It starred Natalie Portman, Julia Roberts, Clive Owen, and Jude Law. And it was a marvellous movie. And in the topography of London was an integral part of it. And this was, I thought, powerful. It was about love. It was about sex. It was about duplicity and manipulation. And also bits of it were very funny. So I thought
you preferred the movie to the stage version.
But what we've seen is, frankly, an inadequate adaptation.
Well, as I say, Richard, you're not entitled to make any comments as a white male stale individual. So, Natasha, is this one for yourself? Do you think it should be taken on board?
I would probably, given the feedback I'm receiving from Richard, probably prefer to watch the film. I think in this circumstance, I could forgive even Natalie Portman if we've got Jude Law and Julia Roberts. yeah, I think I'll stick to the film. But I hope at some point if they can sort of correct it, make another version to show that they can do it well, because it's always nice, you know, to see people learning from things and move on and go on to correct it. So,
Oh, yes, absolutely. It was a huge success. It was a triumph on stage. The funny thing is that this was set in the 90s, the days when people smoked a lot and didn't have computers. And it was the scene between when one character sets the other one up, as I say, pretending to be a woman. It really brought the house down in, you're thinking, frankly, 25 years ago, of course.
Sarah Huntley, now that you've actually had that breakdown, is it something which you think, yeah, 2.5 hours, allowing for scene changes, let's go and check that out at the Lyric Hammersmith.
Yes, I think I will go and see it because I missed it. I didn't, and like Natalie, I'd like to watch the film because I really, really like Clive Owen. So I think I'm going to dig it out. And yes, I'm very involved. I feel curious about it now, so I have to go.
And see the DVD it. To lend you in case you have problems locating it.
Cathy Manso, as you prepare to actually have a location report at York Maze and make the journey from Lincoln to the far depths of York, will you be checking this particular one out if and when you're next down in London?
Yeah, I would love to, honestly, when I'm next in London. I'm actually going to London at the end of September to go see Six, the musical. So I'm very excited to do that. Yeah, that's exactly my emotions, Natasha.
It's amazing. I love it so much.
Oh, you must come and see me and Richard if you're down in London. You
I would love to, honestly.
Do.
All right, end of September, and it'll be a great victory because I will have finally turned in my final dissertation, project, portfolio, whatever I turn in.
You have to celebrate. Celebrate my garden with wine.
Oh, I'm there, Sarah Huntley.
Bear in mind, Kathy, you have to bring some water down to London because by that stage they won't actually have a drop to drink. So
no,
it might be
another set of problems. It'll be something else by then.
I have a question to raise with the group, which I know is very controversial and we're going past time. And so maybe to mull it over for our next discussion, because, you know, I've lived here almost a year and there's still some things I've missed. I understand the rivalry between North and South in my country, and I understand the rivalry between Sydney and Melbourne in Australia, but I'm not understanding the rivalry in England.
Kathy, it's quite simple. Anybody that's based south of Watford is a savage. They need Northern civilization to effectively help work through the whole process. There are various deep-rooted folk who will actually...
But where did it come from, Alex?
And total mismatch of ideas. In fact, then
it comes from the Vikings, who clearly had the right idea, versus the French, who clearly had other issues from that point of view. So it's a big sort of problem with respect to the colony that is actually the British Isles. But so it goes. And don't get me started on the Celts in general, because that's another line entirely. For the moment, Natasha Wanton, Kathy Manser, and Sarah Huntley, and Richard Fitzwilliams go and see things on the devices that you can use various videos on. Go and see 13 Lives using a perfectly valid device like this. This is what you actually need to watch it in its epic sort of form. That's what it's all about. Thank you. Keep watching the movies, and let's have some Radio Gaga.
We must miss you when we grow tired. Gaga. All we hear is Radio Gaga. Radio Gaga.
We'll be right back.
Bye.